Hello, and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast, your weekly dose of inspiration and exploration. Join me, your host, Sam Harris, as I discover how mindset can help you do incredible things through my conversations with the world's most interesting people, from tech billionaires to leading scientists, best-selling authors to notorious hackers. The goal is to increase our collective wisdom and attitudes to make us all happier and healthier, wiser and wealthier. Who doesn't want that?
My name is Sergey Moseyenko. I'm the CEO and the co-founder of Atlas Biomed, a London-based biotechnology company that's doing some geeky stuff, I would say, in DNA sequencing and microbiome sequencing. So we'll get back to that in a moment.
You just heard from Sergey Moseyenko. He is the founder and CEO of Atlas Biomed, the platform for gene sequencing and microbiome testing. They deliver home kits to let you test yourself and then provide huge insights on what the hell is going on in your body and who you are and the things you need to do to stay healthy. It's a really, really cool platform that I think is quite important for anyone that's concerned about their health. And he's dealing with a lot of big stuff of what the future of healthcare is for humanity, how healthcare is going to become a proactive thing, dealing with like prevention medicine rather than just solving problems once they have arisen. And yeah, he knows lots of stuff about gut health and genes. So yes, I would recommend listening and finding out about it. He also went to Singularity University and lots of cool stuff. So this is a really fascinating podcast. I'm really happy that we got to talk.
In my background, I'm a scientist. I was studying math and IT back at my university and then went on. Well, basically, I dropped from my PhD, went on to a place called Singularity University in Mountain View in California. In 2011, for the graduate studies program, which is actually like focusing on exponentially developing technologies. And this was where I had the idea of kind of, you know, switching more to the entrepreneurial, you know, kind of path. And like coming back from the university, I founded the company, which was later called Atlas, and we initiated the research of the human genetics and the gut bacteria that we all have living in us, inside ourselves. And effectively, I was able to assemble the team and then launch the company. And now we're kind of, you know, we're present at the UK market and, you know, growing quite fast. So it's been a really nice and long ride.
Yeah, it's a really interesting area that you guys are working in. I was so interested to interview you. But could we go through the Singularity University stuff first? Because that just sounds like a journey that I haven't really heard much about before, and it's quite different. Yep. Is that just for graduates as they leave university, or is that for anyone interested, so even like a 50-year-old that wanted to go do something with
AI? I mean, there's
AI
a huge variety in terms of people and ages where you can go there. It's more of an executive program, so it'll be actually like the longest program they have. It's called GSP, it basically lasts for 10 weeks. It's like the whole summer. You start in June and you end up late August. And what happens is you have to travel to Mountain View, like 500 meters away from the Google headquarters, in a place called which is called NASA Ames Research Center. So it's basically like a NASA center where they were like, you know, doing there's some sort of science, and it's like guarded, and there's like, you know, military standing every 100 meters. It looks really awesome. Yeah. They have a legendary Hangar 1 there, which is like huge, like enormous building where they used to build like Zeppelins. Like really enormous thing. And what happens with you during these 10 weeks is you select your track. Well, mine was biomed, apparently. And then you get a chance to meet with all of the founders or co-founders or chief executive or science officers for all of the innovative companies around the Silicon Valley. So the Singularity University itself is famous because it's founded by two guys named Ray Kurzweil and Peter Diamandis. So the first one is a technical director at Google, and he is a very famous futurist. Yeah. He wrote several really, really nice books and amazing books on how the exponential technologies is taking us to the singularity, which is like the state of our, you know, kind of development as a humanity, when things really get unpredicted because of the pace of growth and of the pace of development of new tech. And Peter Diamandis is the founder of XPRIZE Foundation. That's another really, really famous company, which is like organizing contests, you know, around, let's say, building, you know, like a lunar robot that can travel across, like around moon, and they like invite people from different countries and smaller companies and larger companies to compete in those contests, kind of, you know, trying to drive certain areas.
Yeah, he's a pretty inspiring guy. Didn't he start the idea without actually any money? He just sort of was like, we're going to have this amazing prize, it's going to be millions, and like people will come and compete. And then he actually then found people to give him money to actually make the thing happen.
Oh, well, my first idea that I had there was a complete failure, like a complete and total disaster. So the first idea that I got there was, you should always remember that was like 2011, right? So I know these things might sound ridiculous now. Back then it was kind of fresh kind of idea. So the idea I had was to build like a social network for people who were doing like genetic testing, and then, you know, have them connected with the genetic counselors, which are kind of, you know, medical doctors that can consult people based on the results of their DNA tests. So I myself, I did the 23andMe test back in 2011. I got my results. I was really excited. I mean, the whole area seemed to be amazing and, you know, so full of new discoveries. Probably the best about it, this for me, was that it's a ton of information that you get about yourself that you cannot get anywhere else. So there's no like blood test, there's no like urine or whatever test that you can do to get all this information about yourself, like your ancestry, your disease risks, carrier status for certain inherited conditions, which, you know, you can, some mutations you can, you know, further pass on to your children. So that seemed so exciting, and I really got, you know, got into this. And the idea I had was, well, why don't we get people connected to each other and also the doctors to have the, you know, discussing this, those results, because I had experienced, you know, when I got my results, I went on and, you know, spoke with all my friends about this. And I like showed them my reports, and I was like always talking to everybody about this. Apparently there is a lot of issues around, first of all, sharing your data, and you are sharing your genetic data. I mean, that worked for me back then, but of course a lot of people would find that confusing or not willing to share at all. There's a lot of ethical implications on sharing your data with doctors or your employers or insurance companies. Yeah. So there's a lot of kind of, you know, really, really important things that you need to take care of. And eventually, like, this whole idea basically, like, I mean, it kind of evolved. So I was like pitching this project and pitching this idea like among my, you know, fellow students at Singularity. And then we kind of were trying to make this into something like a product, like an MVP, you know, like following the lean methodology. Didn't really work out well. And eventually the whole idea kind of pivoted into what's Atlas Biomed today. And that is, you know, trying to build, rather than, you know, getting people united and, you know, sharing their info, but rather than building an ecosystem around individual of different kind of, you know, data points that can tell a lot to himself about his own health. So this is where we are at the moment with Atlas Biomed, you know, offering two different tests, one DNA test and another one microbiome, which is looking deep into your gut microbes. Both tests actually use the kind of very similar technologies, which is like DNA sequencing. And that is something that's been extremely fast in development over the last decades.
Yeah, so how long have you been offering the test then, since 2012 then?
Or? Like, it was 2014 when we first launched the test.
Before then, you just took people's data from like 23andMe and helped them with it then, or?
Yeah, that was the original idea. The original idea, and it actually, I mean, the whole project was named somewhat differently, it was called Primer Life. So the idea was that people who did 23andMe could upload the raw data from the service to our platform and then, you know, share that with the doctors or with other users if they want to.
Yeah.
And like, for example, they could have a, like a paid consultation with the genetic counselor to discuss some of the implications of this test to their health, because, you know, still a lot of people, they left wondering after they do the DNA test, like, what do I do with the data? I mean, what's the idea behind the predisposition? Does it mean I will get this disease or I will not? Should I? Or can I like mitigate the risk by changing my lifestyle? There's a lot of questions people are left with. So kind of genetic counselors are people who can explain that actually properly.
Cool. And so you now offer genetic counseling with people that have got their results from you?
We do this as an add-on service. So yes, there is an option for you to have the consultation, every pretty detailed and extended consultation upon receiving your results with Atlas Biomed.
Cool. I really like that you offer both things. So it's quite synergistic, as in if you find something that's a problem in your genetics, maybe if you eat the right thing, it's not going to be a problem. But if you've been eating the wrong things in your microbiome, you're making it worse. But you could actually sort of fix some of your genetic problems with your biome.
Yes, I mean, true. That's the whole idea behind what we do, is like trying to make a more holistic view on individuals' health. And a lot of things that, you know, that relate with us, especially when we talk about what's called multifactorial conditions. You know, those are diseases which are, you know, well known, like type 2 diabetes or Crohn's disease or obesity. the reason that they are called multifactorial is that there are different factors that can affect basically, you know, you having this disease. So genetics plays its role for every condition like this, but then of course there's lifestyle. There's also like gut bacteria that can cause the problem or can be associated with the problem. There's what you eat, there's how much you exercise, and all these different things. And if you want to have an accurate prediction of the disease risk, you know, because when we talk about personalized medicine, there's a lot of talks around, you know, how we should personalize or, you know, focus on prevention rather than, you know, curation. So to make treatments like, and the whole medicine actually more proactive rather than reactive. So it all first starts with accurate prediction of the disease. So you need to have a system that can tell you at a certain risk point, you have a probability of developing this disease over the next several years. And here are the things that you can do then. You can exercise better, you can eat better, you can screen yourself, you know, to identify the first symptoms of the condition at the early stage so that the treatment process is easier and cheaper. So all of these things lead, actually start at prediction, and this is what's called like a P4 medicine. So the whole concept that was presented by a guy named Leroy Hood, I think about 7 years ago or something. So basically is that the medicine should be predictive, preventative, personalized, and participative. So this is exactly something that we're trying to create. And it's a long way because there's a lot of things we still don't understand, we still don't know, and the science is very young. But what's really exciting about this is it's growing really rapidly, and our understanding of things is growing really rapidly. So it's a nice place to be.
So, question, how did you then start doing the tests? So do you like subcontract to a third party tester, or did you actually do that in house?
Well, what we did was when I got the idea to actually pivot into offering our own tests, we had to assemble a team of scientists and doctors and bioinformaticians, and basically develop our own proprietary system that does what's called the interpretation of the raw data. Because the way that our testings work is we send our customer a kit where he has to spit into, right? So we're collecting saliva. So the sample goes to the lab, and we're using the outsourced lab in Erasmus Medical Center in Rotterdam. They extract the DNA from saliva at the lab. They do what's called genotyping, and that is reading a certain, you know, DNA letters from your genome at the very specific locations which are of interest, which vary between different people. Because a surprising fact to many people is that, like, for example, your and my genome is about 99% the same. So there's a very small percent of variety in our genes, which is actually what makes us different and, you know, predisposed to different diseases or, you know, have different, like, you might be lactose intolerant while I'm not, and all these different things. And what we get from lab is kind of, you know, that specific letters or genotypes or gene variants read from your genome. And then what our system does is turns that raw data, what's called raw data, into the readable report for you that says, well, you have these certain disease risks, or you have these mutations that can be passed to your children, or you have this ancestry composition, which makes you like, you know, like 15% German and 12% British, and you know.
So you get all this amazing data. It's only health-related stuff for now? So you don't have anything like you wouldn't be able to tell me how intelligent I am or something?
We'll have several personal traits. So there's a certain information you get about nutrition and, you know, your metabolism, like lactose intolerance or alcohol flush reaction or, you know, caffeine metabolism. As for the intelligence, it is really a complex trait. Largely is dependent on the education you had when you were a child, when you were growing. So there is, of course, like in any multifactorial trait, there's part to play from genetic side, for sure. I would say there's a lot of research around that, but there's no kind of, you know, final understanding on how, which percentage of this is, you know, genes related and which one's based on, you know, how much you actually, you know, learned during your lifetime. You should always remember, so with anything related with like a complex trait is only partly dependent on genes. And then there's, of course, the entire lifestyle that has to be taken into account before you make any predictions or any conclusions.
Definitely, which is leads right into growth mindset. Doesn't matter what your genes are, you can still make the life that you want, kind of.
Exactly.
Thing.
I mean, I would say, not too many things that are like predetermined 100% based on your genetics. I mean, of course there are, There are certain things they are, but I would say they're rather rare. So like all the rare diseases, like orphan conditions, like cystic fibrosis, for example, is a purely genetic condition. But besides that, I mean, if you're like a generally healthy, grown-up individual, I would say like all the complex diseases that you hear every day, like I mentioned before, like diabetes or obesity or ulcerative colitis, cardiovascular disease, these are all complex diseases which are based not just on your genetics, but which are largely affected by your lifestyle. Which means you control that by knowing your weak spots. I mean, just gives you a space to work on.
Yeah, cool. So when you took your ones, you said you were happy sharing them. So what did you find out about yourself?
Oh yeah, okay. So I'm a carrier of a mutation in the BRCA1 gene. So this is the same gene where Angelina Jolie had a mutation as well.
Oh, cool. So maybe you're related.
I don't think so, no. I'm a male, so men have a really low risk of developing breast cancer. However, this mutation might affect different other risks for men as well, like prostate cancer, for example. So I'm a carrier for this mutation. It was really, for me, it was really like good to know because I'm a big advocate for, like, you know, trying to prevent diseases.
Yeah. So and then you know what you need to get checked out
exactly,
more regularly.
Exactly. So I check myself regularly. I do the screenings, and I mean, even if I ever develop the condition, I would really hope that I'm able to catch that moment as early as I can.
Yeah. Yeah. So cool. My dad's been having a lot of tests for prostate cancer right now, and awaiting results. But yeah, it would be really good if, like, in the future this is sort of on the NHS and everyone knows what they should be checking and things. Do you think that's going to be feasible in like the next 10 years?
I think so, yes. It's actually getting there. There's a 100,000 genome project, and there's a whole shift, and there's a lot of talks on how, you know, the entire healthcare system should turn into prevention, not just the treatment. And I mean, there, of course, the main stopping factor for a long time has been the price. Because, I mean, these tests have been really costly, and it's changing really rapidly. So, I mean, we had a $1,000 genome, you know, just about 2 years ago. Now it's $500. We'll see maybe in about 2 years, it's going to drop to $100. Then it will probably make sense, you know, to kind of, you know, sequence everyone, you know, at birth or at a young age, and then, you know, kind of as you grow, uncover different areas of interpretation of your test which are relevant at this specific age. So, I mean, hopefully this is where we're going. And again, we should always remember that genetics is not everything. It's not the entire picture of you. It's not the entire picture of yourself. And what's really important is combining this data with everything, with your medical history, with your personal health records, so that the doctors have access to combined data sets about you.
Just thinking about in terms of accuracy, do people's results ever get mixed up or anything? So if you ever have like a major sort of, you tell someone they're definitely going to develop something that's going to kill them or that they shouldn't have children, do you test them a second time just to make sure it was accurate?
We definitely recommend doing the test again because our test is not a diagnostics. So this is more of a screening test. And we totally recommend, if we ever find a specific mutation that corresponds to a certain serious condition, we definitely recommend retesting yourself for this specific variant, gene variant. However, I would say, because we're using the ISO accredited lab, which is basically like clinical grade, it's ISO 15189. It's like a medical grade accreditation for the laboratories. And we're using a barcode system on the kit that we sell, which gets scanned. So there's no kind of, you know, manual work, and there's no, you know, human mistake available along the process. I would say that, you know, the chances of mixing the results are extremely low, almost like zero. Still, it doesn't mean that you should fully rely on just one method, because there are different multiple methods which can be applied in different cases for analyzing the DNA. So what we're doing is called genotyping. There are other methods like gene sequencing, that is sequencing the entire like gene or exome or genome. And in different cases, there should be different methods applied for the specific situation. So what we're doing is a rather screening test. So it kind of gives you a vast understanding of the most frequent mutations and gene variants. However, there may be other mutations that we don't cover with our test. So in case we find something, we do recommend retesting that in a, you know, with the GP.
Okay, cool. Okay, and then to jump into more of the microbiome side of things then. So that's a bit more complicated than just spitting in a bottle, so you have to actually take a poo sample.
Oh, yeah.
Do most people do that? Do any people feel like they don't want to take it when they realize that?
Well, you know, like, I would say half of our investors have not still done the test.
Wow.
because they're still kind of, you know, feeling confused, you know, by, you know, mailing their feces.
Yeah.
I personally don't have an issue with that. I think that's actually, it's quite nice. To be very honest, we've tested like 20 different, poo sample collection devices. And I've tested like 20 different kits myself, you know, trying to find the best and kind of, you know, the most easiest to use solution. And which we did. So the kit we're using right now is actually like, it's like a Mercedes among, you know, other stool sample collection devices.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, it's really expensive. Second thing, it does not require a large volume of sample, let's put it this way. So it's like a tiny bit, like pea-sized. So it's not too bad. And then, and the last thing, it has a buffer, a special buffer liquid, which is actually like, like freezing bacterial DNA, which we further analyze in the lab. So it means that there's no bacteria that outgrows among, you know, the sample, within the sample. And there's no bacteria that dies off. And, you know, so we get the same composition of your bacteria as at the moment when you collected the sample, which is really important and makes it easier for to transport the sample from your home to the lab, which is really important.
So, you know, when you're taking like a blood sample, if you have it like first thing in the morning before you've eaten, it's going to be different to like later in the day, and like next week it might be different. Is it similar with your like microbiome sample? Does it change quite a lot through the week? Should it, in a perfect scenario, should I be giving you like one sample like once a month kind of thing?
So we think, first of all, yes, the gut bacteria in your colon does change. I mean, this is a positive thing, actually. That actually means that you can affect the community of your bacteria. So it's like a symbiosis. It's not just something that's a given. It's something you can actually affect, which is really nice. It does not change that rapidly unless you do some really acute interventions, like start taking antibiotics or probiotics, or, you know, change your diet to, let's say, high-fiber diet. But then you will see change. I mean, probably as soon as in 2 weeks, you can see the change, you can spot differences. However, the variation in the bacterial community throughout the day, or like before lunch and after lunch, is not that significant. So the ecosystem is pretty sustainable, that's what I would say. So that's why for generally healthy people, if you're just interested, you know, in, you know, kind of, you know, monitoring or doing like checkups of your gut health, I would say doing this once every 6 months is more or less fine. However, if you want to see the effect of some intervention that you're planning to undertake with yourself, let's say you want to start taking probiotics, what I would recommend doing is you do the test first, then you start taking, let's say, the course of the antibiotics. Let's say you take 12 weeks of the probiotics, and then you can test yourself again to see what was the effect of this on your gut bacteria. And with the probiotics, and I mean, you probably heard there's no like silver bullet, you know, one fits all solution. So it's really more of a kind of, I have a feeling, like a subjective personal feeling, that the whole industry is kind of moving towards personalization. So it's rather than going to the store and just grabbing any random, you know, probiotic drink or supplement, what I think is best is you to test yourself first, you know, see what types of bacteria are missing, and then, you know, trying to pick up the right probiotic drink, which will fill in the missing gaps. So this is where I think the whole industry is going to go. So unless you do something acute with the intervention into your, you know, bacterial community, I would say doing it once every 6 months is okay.
Cool. Is that something that you think you'll look into with Atlas Biomed in terms of maybe delivering the different types of probiotic personalization packs for the right person?
Well, we're developing multiple clinical trials now with different probiotic companies which are interested in actually understanding, not so like, you know, really, really understanding on the bacterial level what's the change that's happening when people are, you know, using their products. We've just recently announced a partnership with the company called Simproof, and it's one of the, I would say, one of the really, really kind of, you know, famous probiotic companies in the UK. I personally really like them for, you know, trying to bring more science into the industry. So this is what they're very actively trying to do. So we're running multiple clinical trials with them at the moment, trying to show the effect of that, of those specific probiotic drink on, you know, in different cohorts of people. So trying to identify people who are responders versus people who are non-responders to the drink. And there are multiple trials that we do with different companies like this, eventually hoping to kind of, you know, get the knowledge base on how different products affect different people. This is where I see a lot of value and a very strong value for the whole industry, because once you realize that, then you might be able to have a more targeted recommendations on what, you know, certain probiotic drinks will work for the specific individual, rather than taking a random kind of choice, right?
We haven't quite really mentioned the fact that your gut bacteria can massively affect different things in your health. We sort of both knew that and so didn't mention it, but what would you say are the biggest differences to your health that could come from having different bacteria inside you?
Well, maybe let's start with the beginning then. Let's start with why is that so important at all, or how many bacteria we have. So it's just very recently turned out that we have about 100 trillion of different bacteria that live in our colon. Actually, it's not just the colon they really like. They live all around us, our body. So you can find them in your hair, in your nose, on your skin. It's basically everywhere. However, there are much more bacteria living in our colon than anywhere else, because it's really dark, it's wet, and there's a lot of food that's falling from the sky for the bacteria. So there's about 100 trillion bacterial cells there. If you weigh that, it's about 2 or 3 kilograms of bacteria, and that's more cells than your own cells. So you are more bacteria than you are human, which is a surprising fact to many of us. And it's just very recently that we had this new instrument on investigating those bacteria. So we used to have a very routine test when we were, cultivating bacteria by putting them on a petri dish and then looking in the microscope what types of bacteria are there, which isn't really a quantified way of researching the bacteria composition. However, what scientists did first time with what's called a human microbiome project, I think that was 2007, is basically applying the same technologies we used to sequence human genome to the bacterial genomes. And so the story goes that the bacteria also have their own genomes, like any other living creatures. Again, like trees or cats or any type of animals, they have their own DNA. And by doing this human microbiome project, the scientists were able to identify this very specific gene, which is called 16S. So it's like 16S gene that's only present in bacteria. It's very conservative, and it's able, by reading this, they were able to build up the library of different variations of this gene, which are present in different types of bacteria. So we have this knowledge base on what types of bacteria have which variations of this gene. So if we take a human sample, human poo sample, and read all the 16S genes that's present there, we're able to quantify all the different types of bacteria present in the sample. And this is a 1,000 times more detailed way, like a higher resolution method than the routine tests we used to have before. And again, this first time ever happened in 2007. So since then, the number of publications and scientific discoveries about microbiome has been growing really exponentially. So there's 20,000 papers now covering different areas of connections between your health, your nutrition, your metabolism, and your gut bacteria. Probably the most important are the way your immune system is associated with the gut bacteria, the way that the gut bacteria can cause chronic inflammation, which is a common symptom for almost any complex diseases that we discussed before. So anything starting with Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, diabetes, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis are all related. They have one thing in common, which is chronic inflammation, and then can be largely caused by the imbalances of the gut bacteria. Then there's a very recently discovered connection, and very exciting connection, between the gut and the brain, which is called the gut-brain axis. So it turns out not just the inflammation or nutrition and metabolism is related with the bacteria, but also our mood and things like anxiety and depression can be associated with this. So they have special patterns in the gut microbiome. And it's not just a one-way street, there's a two-way street on how our brain can communicate with the gut bacteria, which is really exciting. So that means that by changing your gut bacteria, by changing your diet or controlling your gut bacteria, you also have a ways of affecting your current, your mood and or the state of depression effectively, I really, we believe this will lead into new therapies and new clinical protocols on how to treat different things, completely different things, because we never even had the idea that these things might be related. But now we have the data that's, you know, supporting that, and more data coming in each year. So yeah, there's a lot of exciting things. Bacteria help us to metabolize and synthesize different vitamins, mostly B and K vitamins. They also produce a very important short-chain fatty acids, which help us fight the inflammation in our gut. Like the most famous acid is called butyrate, which is also very important for what's called the mucus layer. It's the protective layer that lies on top of our epithelial cells of our colon and basically protects us against the enzymatic activity of the bacteria that live with us. Because if you take the bacteria from your gut and if you put it on your skin, just on top of your skin, you might get a chemical burn because of how active they are and how many enzymes, you know, they produce all the time. So having this protective layer is also very important. Moreover, this layer can be a house for different bacteria, which are really, really helpful for us, like Akkermansia. So they really like to live in this specific layer, and those bacteria are really unknown to associate it with, you know, lean people who are like slim. So again, having this layer is also very important. And this layer is only possible when you have a balanced gut bacteria. That means you have enough bacteria that's producing this layer to protect yourself against the bacteria. So a lot of interesting findings that we are starting to, you know, associate with our bacterial community and its connection between ourselves as a host and them as an ecosystem. And more data coming in. So there's a lot of information we already have in our reports, and there's a lot of information we still don't have, because we believe, I mean, although there's a lot of exciting, you know, scientific discoveries, I mean, the information is just, the precision is just not there yet. We see a lot of interesting insights, but we're just not there yet with, you know, enough of data supporting that. So pushing the science forward here is very exciting.
Yeah, definitely. It's a really interesting area. And I was watching a study about twins, where one was fat and one was thin, and then they found that it was mostly down to like their microbiome. But is that because the one's eating the wrong food and has become fat, or is it because of their biome has gone wrong and then has caused them to go fat, is another question. But had any of your customers decide to take fecal transplants because of what they've received, or have you always urged them to just try and take biotics instead?
Well, the fecal mass transplantation is a very exciting area, and it has a very limited set of clinically approved indications at the moment. But I personally believe that this, you know, set of indications might expand as there are more clinical trials, you know, happening, trying to find evidence on the effectiveness of this therapy. Just for those listeners who have not heard about this before, the fecal mass transplantation means taking the bacteria from the pool of one individual and then extracting those bacteria, sometimes, you know, putting that in a pill, sometimes, you know, putting that to the colon through the colonoscopy, for example, and transferring that to another individual. So it's like an organ transplant. Actually, a lot of scientists are calling microbiome a new organ.
Yeah.
So right now it's been mostly used to cure a very specific infection, which is lethal. However, there are multiple trials. There's about 100 or 200 clinical registered trials that are trying to show that this method can be effective in other indications.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of experiments with mice, for example, where people would take a microbiome from obese people and a microbiome from lean people and put this in the mice, which have no bacteria at all in their colon. And then, you know, feeding them with the same amount of calories, they were able to show that people, the mice, which had, let's call this obese microbiome, really turned fat, while the mice who had a lean microbiome, they stayed kind of, you know, slim and fit. So there's a lot of interesting things to investigate there. But again, this is really early days. It's really early days, but the whole area is very exciting. We don't recommend doing fecal mass transplantation just for fun or for whatever reason. Don't get me wrong, there should be a very clinical, because this is a medical procedure.
Yeah.
There should be a very clear indication on when you need that.
Good. Because you do see the fecal mass transplants plants being advertised as like cure for everything, and obviously there's sort of people in America that are just offering it when, I mean, you have sort of there is research saying that it could actually help with so many things. So it's sort of based in science, but they don't really know how to do it properly or which sort of bacteria to be putting into you exactly. So it's quite dangerous.
Like any other medical procedure, fecal mass transplantation can be dangerous and can be harmful. So that really depends on the methodology. I do believe personally that there's a lot of potential behind that. But again, it requires a lot of clinical trials first to prove the efficiency and safety.
It's definitely like super exciting, but more watch this space and come back in like 3 years' time. Because there's been some people that have had like transplant from like their mother or something, but then they've ended up getting like a different disease that they didn't have a problem with now in a worse place kind of thing.
Well, another approach here, for example, is, you know, using your own gut bacteria and then kind of, you know, freezing that. And then using that whenever you need it, like, for example, taking the antibiotics, which is, again, an interesting concept, but, again, requires clinical trials.
Cool. Okay, and then would you say there's any real things that I could go home and say, like, if I eat beetroot every day, I'm going to have an awesome microbiome? Is there, like, any one or two wonder things you can do for your diet?
Well, different bacteria likes different types of food, like different types of fibers, like different polyphenols. And so it's, you know, doing the test, it's kind of, you know, rather getting like an inclusive recommendations for your diet. So it won't build up the diet for you, but it will tell you, here's the top 10 selected products that based on your microbiome profile can potentially increase the diversity of your gut bacteria. And diversity is really the key here, because this is more of a kind of a general representation of your overall gut health. So the more diverse your bacterial community is, the better, because of the abundance of functions that they have. So that whenever something's wrong, and let's say some bacteria gets wiped out, there are other bacteria that have the same function, and the ecosystem is still functioning, right? So you don't lose the important functions for the community. So the more diverse your microbiome is, the better. That's a general understanding. And we all know, like, you know, eating vegetables and fruits, it's good. Like, we all hear that all the time. But it's like answering what vegetables and fruits are good for you. That's what we're trying to do. And another point here is, like, for example, you know, from our practice, we see a lot of people who think that they eat a lot of vegetables, and then they get like the low diversity scores for their bacteria, and they're asking, like, why is that happening? And, well, part of the answer could be, well, they eat the same fruits and vegetables every day. So to have the diversity in your gut bacteria means you need to have the diversity in your foods. That's not the reason why we're kind of, you know, updating these recommendations every week, trying to, you know, also like gamify the process and have you try to mix different things and try new products, which can potentially increase your diversity. There's a whole concept like what's called Eat the Rainbow. And that is like, you know, try picking vegetables and fruits of different colors, like, you know, like the colors of the rainbow every week. Another point is that people, like, there's a lot of people who are tracking calories, but really, really few people know how many fibers they're eating. And the fibers is the main source of food for our gut bacteria. So the general statistic across UK is that out of recommended, well, 28 to 32 grams a day based on, you know, gender and age, the people in Britain are only consuming about half of this amount. So we're really under eating the fibers. And no, because that is, well, part of the answer why is nobody knows how many fibers is, you know, contained in the apple.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody knows. And that's another problem. So I really suggest you try to, you know, pay attention to this. And, you know, one day we had this experiment. We had a meeting with our users, and we took different like baskets, and we filled them with the products, with the fruits and vegetables, containing 30 grams of fiber, like just to show how many food you need to eat, how many vegetables and fruits you need to eat a day. And that's a really surprising, you know, a really surprising volume of foods, I would say. So I guess you're really shocked. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of vegetables and fruits you need to eat daily, you know, to get enough fibers.
Good that I'm vegetarian these days and love all my veggies. That's cool. Have you changed your diet a lot since you've got into this then?
I would say that I've been always kind of cautious in terms of, you know, trying to eat diverse foods and everything. However, I did have a case when about 2 months ago, I had to take a course of antibiotics, which was really tough. Like, I did my tests before and after the course of antibiotics, basically, which showed that I got wiped out most of my probiotic and, like, you know, beneficial, like, healthy bacteria. And I had to kind of effectively go on and restore that. So the approach that I really enjoyed, you know, from using our own product. Probably not too nice, you know, of me speaking so much about our own product, but still, I mean, what I did is I was really using this as a tool to kind of build up the communities that were wiped out during the antibiotic course. So I've been taking probiotics. I'm not saying this is like a general recommendation or anything. I'm just explaining my own case. So I was taking some sort of probiotics. I was really focusing on the high fiber diet. So I was really trying to eat enough fibers. And then I did test about a month after I ended up taking the antibiotics. And it basically showed that I managed to return to my previous state of my gut microbiome. So yeah, I mean, it's just another instrument. That's what I'm trying to say, probably. It's like a stethoscope, you know, that, I mean, you have certain indications where it's can be applied and where it's useless. So, I mean, it's the same tool that we've just recently found that can be used by the doctors and you know, consumers. So this is what we're trying to advocate. It's just a new tool.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. Then, so back to just more general, less science-based stuff. So how did you go about getting funding and like actually making the business happen from the idea stage?
I would say we got lucky, you know, to find the right investors who trusted the idea and the team that we had initially. So we managed to raise like the seed investments for the company because, you know, one big problem developing biotech or biomedical startup comparing with the IT, general IT startup, is that anything related with health requires 10 times more investments. It's not just, you know, another web application or, you know, iOS application that you can, you know, develop in your garage and then launch and, you know, hopefully grow and get rich. So with the biotech, it requires a lot of quality control, establishing processes, customer support, extensive development. It's largely an IT product because, I mean, we mostly work with the data that's coming from the lab, but then it's so much more as well. It's like you need to register that with their regulators, properly run the processes, make sure you don't get the samples mixed up and everything. So that takes a lot of and much more investments and a lot of work. So we were lucky enough to find investors who understood this and who actually did their DNA tests with probably like all companies that were present on the market back in 2013. And I mean, they ended up believing in the team, and this is how it all started actually.
Okay, cool. And then how did you get the team together to prove that then? So that was just friends from the Singularity University?
It was part of the team was the friends from the Singularity, yes. Part of the team were, you know, the people I knew before and I already worked with in bioinformatics and science. Several people we just managed to, you know, I managed to negotiate with at a very early stage to get them into the company, like another my co-founder. Andre, who's a medical doctor, endocrinologist, and he's a serial entrepreneur as well. So we were, you know, in touch with him for a while before I ended up setting up the company, and I managed to get him on board, you know, by, you know, just, you know, probably, you know, kind of explaining the mission and, you know, sharing the vision. So, and he was, as a doctor, he was really excited, I believe. So this is one of the reasons why we had this kind of a very shared passion for what we did. And this is very important at the early stages of the company when you have to go through a lot of struggle before you get the, you know, the product working, before you get the first customers and, you know, hopefully happy investors. There's a lot of pain you have to go through. So, you know, having the passion and the shared vision is extremely important. So I don't know what to say except that it takes a lot of hard work and probably luck to get the team and then to get the investments. So, yeah, I guess we were lucky at some point and maybe probably did our job right.
Yeah. Was there any specific thing you learned about pitching to investors that you were doing wrong and then you realized if you changed it, you started getting things right? Or was it?
Probably the biggest mistake that I had was, you know, again, like with the very first idea that I just explained to you after the Singularity University of, you know, building the social network and all this kind of stuff. Because, you know, pitching that, well, first to the consumers and then to the investors was a really hard work. So I'm not saying that the idea was like total crap. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it had its minuses. So, I mean, you know, realizing that along the way, because you can be really passionate about some certain ideas and it might be a real struggle for you to hear negative feedback in the, you know, especially in the beginning. However, listening to that feedback is crucial. And then, you know, realizing, okay, this is probably not going to work. Let's try something else. So this is, I would say, for the startup, especially in the early stage, that's the most crucial part of the process. You know, just stay open to the critics.
Okay. Then in terms of like the future, what's like your biggest priority now that you're working on, would you say?
Well, we're, first of all, trying to grow the business and grow the company. We're trying to push the science and trying to push not just the science actually, but also the indications of using the test and, you know, getting that into the clinical setting, you know, such as clinical protocols and eventually, hopefully someday, insurance policies. This is extremely interesting. And, you know, with the microbiome, there's still, as I mentioned before, there's still so much things that we just don't know yet. And, you know, pushing that boundaries for us, we don't want just to be a commercial company that's selling tests, but we also want to be the company that's pushing the science and its, you know, applications in the real life medicine. So this is what keeps us going, actually.
Have you had any data on what happens when people fast?
Yes, fasting is really like the type of bacteria that I mentioned before, Akkermansia, for example, that's considered to be a really probiotic, really like a healthy bacteria, like really beneficial bacteria. Lives in your mucus. There's no known way. We just don't know how to cultivate these bacteria outside of the human bodies because there's no probiotics that contain this bacteria. And it's known to grow when people fast. So fasting can be really good for some of the bacteria. However, again, I would never suggest this. Just, you know, again, just out of curiosity. So yeah. Make sure to speak with the doctor. Make sure to run this in a controlled manner.
So in terms of the benefit of fast, is that, so people who like microfast and only eat in like an 8-hour window, do they get this benefit, or does it have to be like a 40-hour fast before they start having the bacteria change?
Yeah, it's really hard to say because I'm not sure there's enough evidence that supports specific type of fasting that's the most beneficial for the bacteria. I think this is still something for us to investigate. My personal understanding is that it's probably going to be individual. So it's going to be different for different people, and the different fasting regimes will be mostly beneficial for different people. So, I mean, again, really hard to say at the moment, and still another thing to investigate for the scientists and doctors.
Okay, cool. Have you got any books that you'd really recommend people to read?
Definitely. My favorite, my like number one ever favorite book is called Harry Potter and the Methods of Rationality. It's like a book about Harry Potter, but it's actually been written by a different author, and it's kind of, I think it's only been distributed for free in the internet, so you can, you know, download it for free. That's the only reason why they're not breaking kind of, you know, the patents and everything. So however, the book is one, it's just amazing. I would say it's like a Bible for transhumanists, you know, like people who are advocating for longer health span, and you know for people who are really kind of, you know, trying to make science help people live longer and healthier. So, and it's large, so this book is largely around that. However, to me personally, it's been like the best 2,000 pages that I ever read, probably.
Wow, 2,000 pages, that's not,
yeah,
sure.
That's a long book.
Yeah, very prepared. Okay, and then what is one of your earliest memories that is distinct?
Probably the youngest memory I have is, I grew up in Moscow as a child, and my parents used to send me, I mean, this is a very traditional thing in Russia, that the parents send you over to the village, to your grandma who lives in the village, which is a completely normal thing,
yeah,
in Russia. So I spent my summers, up until I was like 7 years old, spent all my summers at my grandma's in a village with like real cows and, you know, pigs and chicken and a lot of animals. And one of my earliest memories was when I was at grandma's. Like, everybody's going nuts about kombucha these days, right? So
yeah.
It's like everywhere. Okay, so which is really actually, it's really nice and it's helpful for your gut bacteria. So I advocate for this
cool.
as well. however, like a fun thing that in Russia, we used to have this kombucha drinks like way before, like in the 80s or something. And like it was, every single family had this, we call this like a tea mushroom. And it was a huge jar, a glass jar, where people would put tea in it, and there was a huge mushroom, you know, floating on top of this, which was effectively creating kombucha. And then, I mean, your grandma would just, you know, take this huge jar and pour you over this kind of, you know, we didn't even know the word kombucha, it just did not exist. We just called this like a tea mushroom or whatever. She'd just pour this drink to you and you would drink it like in the morning. So this was one of my youngest memories, is how I'm drinking this thing, you know, in the village with my grandma.
That's cool. Who knows, maybe you could have started a business doing that 5 years ago. Billionaire right now.
Yeah, maybe.
Funny.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, it seems like you guys are doing really well. Just to backtrack a bit, so your biggest competition is like 23andMe and stuff then?
In genetic testing, yes. However, 23andMe is not doing microbiome testing. So I would say we're the only company now that's doing both tests.
You know, is your microbiome part of the business bigger than your genetic? Because there's so many other people doing genetics.
I would say it's more or less an even split right now between those tests. You know, in different geographies, people, you know, tend to be interested in different things. Like I would say probably in the UK, we get more interest from the public for the microbiome tests than for the genetic tests. However, for some other geographies, it's the other way around. So overall, it's more or less an even split, I would say.
Do you find that most people usually go for both of them if they do buy anything?
About 40% of them, of our customers, are using what's called a bundle. Yeah. It's like, you know, purchasing both kits at the same time. And we're actually advocating for this. Again, I mean, when I was saying we're really trying to bring the holistic view around the individual's health, that actually means that you have to combine different, you know, data points like a puzzle.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to get both. Yeah, I was on your website, and I just have to say, you've done an amazing job of your website.
Awesome.
Amazing.
Well, our design team is going to be happy to hear that.
Yeah. I sent it to my friends who are coding, and were like, guys, just go on this website. You don't have to buy anything. Just go on it. And they were like, wow, this is so good.
It's not an easy job. And, you know, I'm not sure if many, like a lot of people really understand this, but when you have a really high tech and like the cutting edge science, another really important thing is, you know, to try to make it as consumer friendly as possible. So, you know, not using this, you know, some super fancy scientific geeky words, but, you know, try to put this in a user friendly manner, not just the wording, but also the design and usability. And that's a hard work. That's, I believe personally that that's one of our, you know, expertise as a team.
Cool. All right. Awesome. That was nothing else you want to say specifically?
I would just recommend to people to at least, you know, try to eat the diverse things. You know, try to act diverse, choose diverse products. Take care about your gut health. Try to stay proactive. So we all want to see, like, you know, Elon Musk landing space shuttles on Mars. So if you really want to see that, we need to live longer. And to live longer, the only way to do it is, you know, take care of your health today, not wait until you get sick.
And it's been super fascinating, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Sam. Yeah, it was absolutely my pleasure.
So, what a fascinating human. Thank you very much for Sergey coming on the podcast and dropping all that very useful health information and general inspiring attitude to making the change you want to see in the world. I have taken the gut test and DNA sequencing test, and there happened to be a set of results. I'm not going to say whose results they are, but there are a set of results on the podcast website, and you can download them to see the kind of things that you get. And it was quite interesting. In my report, I happened to be a carrier of a certain eye disease, which is okay, it doesn't affect me as long as I don't have a wife that has the same carrying gene. And I'm at risk of a few things. Cool that I know about them and can be working to ensure the best chance of not developing things. On the gut side of it, it's just like a really useful report of everything that's going on, and you get a weekly thing, update of what to include in your diet, and it's really super useful, and I've been trying different foods that I would never normally eat and stuff, and I think it's helping. I feel better inside. So yeah, I would really recommend using Atlas Biomed, and I think they have a Christmas offer on at the moment. If you use the offer code XMAS, that's XMAS for anyone that doesn't know how to spell XMAS, then yeah, you will get 15% off discount on any order of gut and or DNA sequencing. So I would recommend checking it out if you're a bit of a health conscious person, or you're just fascinated by science and what the hell's going on in your body, or other family members. I'd also like to thank Sergey for his book recommendation of Harry Potter and the Methods of Rationalization, or something like Methods of Rationality, because it's great. And I started listening to it this week and I can't stop. So I would recommend that if you feel like having a bit of fun over Christmas. And on that note, take it easy and keep growing, and whatever else you do, do it with a smile.
You've just listened to an episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your preferred app and give me a good rating, as these go a really long way. If you are unable to give good feedback right now, try sharing the show with a friend who will, or just wait for the show to improve. If you have any ideas for the show or you just want to chat, then please reach out to me on Twitter at SamHarrisTweets or Instagram at SamJamSnaps. Show notes and other links to topics discussed in the episodes are available at the website, growthmindsetpodcast.com. Thanks so much for listening. Give yourself a big hug from me. If you're with a friend, give them a hug as well. And I hope you enjoy your next podcast.